everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Yeah, we've got the sexy theme song, and I've got a sexy guest. He's maybe my most frequent guest. Hello, Brad Coates.
Calling hello,
from
Diana, and hello,
Paradise,
audience.
Honolulu.
I doubt that I'm really the most sexy.
Yeah. What?
I doubt that I'm really your most sexy guest, but I probably am one of your more frequent.
Yes, you are. I think you're both, and you're always. It's just such a pleasure to have you on again. Brad Coates and I have been friends since 1999, so that's like 17 years, isn't it, Brad? We're both getting older, but better, I think.
Definitely, definitely.
Brad Coates is the author of Divorce with Decency, and he knows a thing or two about the importance of romance. And so our topic today is what women want, female needs, desires, and behavior in romantic relationships. And all of this is in Brad's wonderful book, Divorce with Decency. And this is a book full of really straightforward insights about all of the winds of social change. And he contends that divorce is not the shameful failure it was once considered, but more an essential aspect of a revamped marriage system. There's so much in your book. It is now in its fifth edition?
Fourth edition is out now. Fifth edition comes out next year.
Okay, next year, yeah. And so the great thing about this book, and I'm going to read you the long subtitle, Divorce with Decency, the Complete How-To Handbook and Survivor's Guide to the Legal, Emotional, Economic, and Social Issues. And you now...
That should cover it, shouldn't it?
It should cover it. And you have information on Can Your Marriage Be Saved? And Love in the Internet Age. Those were important updates for you, weren't they, Brad?
Yeah, well, it is. It's an ever-changing landscape, that's for sure. And
yeah,
we can talk about some of it today. I went back through the book to try and sort out specific issues that pertain to women as they go through not only divorce but also relationships in general. The book is really not just about divorce; it's about any kind of romantic relationship or the decision not to be in a romantic relationship. But there are some definite trends that are becoming pretty clear for as vis-a-vis women. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I've recommended this book to so many of my clients. It's been really helpful, also in preventing divorce. Because that's important. But today we're going to look at, as I announced at the top of the show, we're going to look at romance and women, and the parts of your book include the women's movement and older women and communication needs and so on and so forth. On page 29 in your book, you say a very wise thing. I see it again and again in my practice. Women want to hear, I love you, and I understand. A man wants to hear, that makes sense, and that seems to indicate a linear thought. But women think differently, and you tease all of this out and the differences, and you see it a lot in your practice. Can you expand on that a little more, Brad?
Sure. Well, you know, it is definitely true that women, you know, women are much more interested in communication and want to be understood. They want, you know, a mate who shows some basic kindness, not always a strong male trait. They want to have their space to be themselves. There are lots of issues that are important to women. The difference is that it's only been, you know, relatively recently that women have been able to be heard on these issues. I mean, used to be the case was that women, whether they liked it or not, they had to stay with their mate if he was the provider. Now, that may sound strange to your millennial listeners,
right,
but it wasn't all that strange to those of us that grew up in the 50s and 60s. And what's really changed now is that women don't have to put up with anything really that they don't want to. I mean, as I was making some notes for this, I kind of broke it down into some different categories. I thought I'd talk a little bit about how things have changed for women professionally, and everybody knows this, but these statistics are somewhat compelling. I mean, women's earnings grew 44% between 1970 and 2007 versus only a 6% growth for men. Mm. In 1960, 32% of wives worked. In 1970, 40% of wives worked. In 2008, 61%. So just the number of women that are their own self-sufficient economically is changing the landscape. 57% of all bachelor's degrees in college are now going to women. 57% of the women enrolled in college, of the enrollees in college are women. The graduate degrees have similar statistics for degrees in business, law, medicine. It's now primarily women. In one third of all marriages, the wife is better educated than the husband. And the wife is the main breadwinner in 22% of all U.S. households nowadays versus only 7% in 1970. So that changes the whole, balance of power, such as it is, within a relationship. Women don't have to put up with anything they don't want to put up with anymore if they're in a situation where they can economically move on.
Yeah, they don't have to stay. I think you say this somewhere in your book. They don't have to stay out of need, and if they do stay, they want to stay out of love in the marriage.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's the single biggest change in relationships. I mean, now women, whereas it might have been that, a woman would have, since caveman days, looked for a mate because he was strong and could, stave off the saber-toothed tiger at the cave door. He was strong and physically powerful maybe in the old days, and maybe, since the turn of the 20th century, they stayed with a guy who may have been a bit of a jerk, but he was a good provider financially. Now, unless women are getting what they want emotionally out of a relationship, they can cut and run. And that's a relatively recent phenomena, and it's changed the whole landscape of relationships.
It has. And I often like to distinguish between want and need. And ideally, if you're serious about somebody, you ought to be able to say, I really want you even more than I need you. That is to say, I can live without you, but I can live better with you. I can live better
right.
with you.
Which is, of course, the way it should be.
Yes.
But you didn't always have the flexibility to make that choice.
Yeah, I think it's really important for women to know that they can survive without a relationship if need be, but that they can be empowered within the relationship. So that's why they want to make a really good choice in a relationship, because then they can be empowered within it.
Correct. Yeah, and they are. They are mm-hmm. much more powerful nowadays than they used to was. And even that has created some interesting stresses, because you've now got a situation where women can the good news is they can step into formerly male dominated roles. They have more choices nowadays, certainly, but they also have more stress because choice is inherently stressful. So
yes.
there's a columnist that I love, Maureen Dowd,
who
wrote a really interesting article.
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I quote her. I quote a lot of people in this book.
Because mm-hmm.
I'm not all that smart myself, so I quote people that are smarter than me usually.
That's not true. You're real smart. But anyway, I like, part of what makes your book so interesting is that you do call some very great quotes. So go ahead with Maureen Dowd.
Well, Maureen Dowd wrote this interesting column called "The Decline in Women's Happiness:
yes.
A Complex Phenomenon," and she talks about how women and the young women at the early stages of their life start out feeling more fulfilled and generally more upbeat than a lot of men do, but
mm-hmm.
the women tend to get gradually less happy as they age, versus men who get happier as they get older. which is kind of an interesting phenomena. So you get this situation, like I say, women have more choices, but it's inherently stressful. So Ms. Dowd proposes this paradoxical question. She says, did the feminist revolution end up benefiting men more than it really did women? Because now women seem to have gotten, you know, into some power positions, but now they're facing the same stresses, the same midlife crises that males used to have. That was the prerogative, predominantly the domain of males, and now women have stepped right into that. So it's definitely a different scenario now. When marriage is no longer imposed by economic necessity, it brings us to a place where marriages aren't held together, like you said, by need as much as they are by love. And that, you know, and that's a change, because maybe a lot of guys are a little, you know, lax when it comes to providing, you know, women what they need in this sort of revamped grid that people are looking at.
Yeah, you say in your book that women have more choices, but that really equals more stresses. And, more choices, but more stress, a man in the past.
I can see it in my own life. My wife is a very hard-charging, one of the top real estate agents here in Hawaii, and, you know, she runs a schedule that is extremely stressful and undoubtedly worse than mine, and is always in the middle of, you know, who's going to sue who over what, and, you know, what's the complaint is about this, that, or the other thing that was or wasn't disclosed in a real estate deal. And, you know, it's all the same crap, if I can say that, you know, over the radio.
Yeah, you can say anything on this show.
That I face in my daily life as a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
But it is no fun to deal with for guys or girls.
And
sure enough, everybody's in the middle of it.
Yeah. And then you also talk, and this is important to our conversation, that a woman's communication needs are not being met, because the theme of this show is about women and their romantic needs and so on, right? And you say in your book, that the communication needs just are, the man is not hearing the woman, and meantime, she is frustrated because she would like for him to hear what her needs are, and he's somehow not getting it. The message sent is not the message received.
Well, there's all kinds of studies that talk about how women, you know, have an average of like in the range of 20,000 communication words or facial expressions or body language to relate their messages, whereas guys' daily average adds up to about 7,000 communication words. So if that's even remotely true, that means that the women are seeking out communication three times as often as guys are responding to it. And you talk about these, you know, men's style of report talk where, like, you know, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts, like the old TV shows. And you know, women are talking about rapport talk where they, you know, they want to sort of talk around issues and, you know, have a communication that is maybe not quite so linear in its direction, but is, you know, an important way of a woman sort of opening herself up to her guy, whereas guys are just always looking to fix it and just get an immediate, very specific kind of response to a specific problem. And women's issues are more deep-seated and not always so easily conducive to specific solutions, nor do they really want a specific solution.
So
they just want to discuss it.
Yeah. Let's take it a step further. Because it's really about responsiveness to your partner's emotions. And responsiveness to a partner is what makes a relationship feel fair. And that requires flexibility and responsiveness to emotions. We both like John Gottman and his research and in the Love Lab and so on, his 40 years of research, and he talks about how people try to get their partner's attention or interests or open a conversation or share humor or affection, And so sometimes the partner turns towards such a bid or a need, and the turning towards needs to be at a high level as opposed to turning away. Those bids of affection, I think we've talked about this before on my program, those bids for affection that Dr. Gottman talks about.
Oh, no question. No question. Yeah. Like I say, I asked my wife last night in preparation for this show. I said, you know, what do you think? What would you say women want? She said, we want, you know, especially as we get older, we want our space to be ourselves, which I guess means, you know, out from underneath the shadow of a dominant male. And, you know, maybe in her case, she's taken up, you know, some artistic pursuits and different, you know, she's dancing hula, she's doing all kinds of stuff, and she wants to be a little bit left alone. And then, you know, she says also understanding and basic kindness. They, you know, the guys have got a nasty habit of, you know, speaking down to women or dictating stuff to, you know, and rather than, you know, being quite so collegial about, you know, hearing what the other side's saying. I mean, it's kind of an interesting phenomena. What, you know, basically what's happened, and, you know, for me, my perspective as a divorce lawyer, which kind of relies on people getting married in order for me to stay in business, is that, you know, people aren't getting married anymore. You know, a lot of men aren't getting married anymore because they, you know, the men's big drive always is, you know, a lot, not always, but a lot is, you know, foolishly oriented towards, you know, straight physical stuff. I mean, I see a woman with big breasts, or I get to have sex with a woman, or I get to, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, men are a little, you know, goofy on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Women want, you know, something obviously that goes much, much deeper. And when they don't get it, there's a lot of women that are just, you know, refusing to get married, period. In Britain now, they've got, I read a book called Free Males. More women are staying happily single.
And, free males,
like free of males.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that, you
now,
know, so in Britain, they're seeing the lowest marriage rate on record. More free males living alone. The rate of people living solo has doubled in the past 20 years. Females in Great Britain, and you know, especially for the women that used to be in the primary marrying age of, you know, say 25 to 44. You know, these women, like I say, the rate of these women choosing to live solo rather than get married has doubled in the last 20 years. And in Japan, they've got something that some sort of smart-ass commentators have called the boutique babies, where these women refuse to marry the, you know, the Japan's society is still very, very male-dominated. And both the professional world and the home life. My wife is Japanese, so I'm over there all the time. And, you know, if you're a Japanese woman, you marry into a guy's family, and you're basically submissive to his, you know, his mother. And, you know, you're a housewife. You don't get to pursue a career very far once you've gotten married and had kids. So, you know, a lot of these women are just refusing to get married. It's not a real pleasant scenario for them. And they call them the boutique babies because they continue to live in their parents' house, save up the money, and then they come to Hawaii and go shopping at Hermes and, you know, Vuitton and all these other little boutiques that are along our main shopping streets. It's pretty funny, the boutique babies. But that's
very interesting. And, of course, Japan now has a very low birth rate, and people are not having much sex. And in the early 90s, I did a research project in Japan. I think I've told you about it, but these I looked at the guy geishas, the hosts, who catered to neglected, wealthy women. In the,
you know, that was always my dream career, but
you would have been good at it.
They sent me to law school instead.
So the guy geishas, yeah, and I did. I had a questionnaire that pulled for very specific sexual attitudes and behaviors, and it turns out had it translated into Japanese and gave it to these guys. I made friends, not intimate friends, but friends with the manager of the club, AI Love Club, and he said he would dock the host's pay if they didn't answer the questionnaire. So they did answer the questionnaire, and it turns out that these guys were very idealistic. They felt that they had an obligation to provide women with some sexual satisfaction. A lot of the Japanese husbands were not doing the job. I talked to wives, Japanese wives, who were really unhappy with their Japanese husbands, who were not very creative.
Well, I think probably, you know, a lot of wives are probably unhappy with American husbands, too. There's something like, again, so there's all these, you know, you're the sex goddess or guru or whatever. I should phrase that carefully.
Both, both.
But there
I
we
hope.
Go. But, you know, there's all these statistics on the male versus female satisfaction with sex. And you know, let me give you a couple. I'm a big statistics guy. So, you know, 60% of men, but only 35% of women say sexual activity is important in their lives. Women prefer foreplay to sex by about 24%. 43% of women, but only 39% of men, complained of dissatisfaction in the bedroom, according to American Medical Academy study. 3 out of 4 women prefer kissing to sex, to the actual sex itself. And then you and I have talked before about I think it's a very clever term, outer course, you know, as opposed to intercourse, where, you know, guys are always going right in for the clothes, and women would much prefer to, you know, dabble around the edges, at least for quite a while before they move totally to the clothes, I guess. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. it's a... you know, it's a different set of experiences apparently for women than it is for men, especially if the guys are not very skilled and they just barge right in. Nothing seems to upset women more than that.
Yeah, we have talked about the kissing that you just mentioned before. 3 out of 4 women think kissing is much more intimate than having sex, and so kissing for many women is not foreplay, it's the best sexual play. And this statistic came from an internet survey of 100,000 kissers, women. So, I had a couple just last week. I was seeing, and she was saying how they never kiss, and she feels suffocated, and... Of course, she had some sexual abuse in her past, so that fits. But and then prostitutes often don't kiss. But kissing for most couples activates primal urges. It's a very primitive need. And
I'm kind of going a little nuts right now in my own marriage because my wife's had this cold for like the last week, and I haven't been able to kiss her at all except for like on the top of her head or somewhere, but you know, somewhere non-contagious. And, you know, I miss kissing her.
Of course. And, yes, of course. I also say sort of playfully that kiss was a word invented by the poets to rhyme with bliss. And
I like that.
Yeah, but some people need to know, and I counsel my clients about this, that they have to start with soft lips. It's not a good idea for the man to immediately put his tongue down his partner's throat. You know, there has to be soft lips and some arousal. You know, backing up to something we were talking about before, you have a great quote in your book. I love the quotes in your book. But this quote is you're welcome, Katharine Hepburn. And she said, if you want to sacrifice the admiration of many men for criticism of one, go ahead, get married. And, of course, she famously never got married. So she was...
And defied lots of other social conventions.
Oh, she did. One reason I named my daughter Catherine, she's now known as Kate, but I saw Katharine Hepburn when I was pregnant with my daughter in a play, one of the last plays she did in San Francisco. And she was wonderful. She was wonderful in this theatrical presentation. And I'd always admired Katharine Hepburn because she wore trousers when other women didn't. She was beautiful but unconventional, and
carried on a long love affair with Spencer Tracy, despite the fact that he was married, which was totally verboten back then. I know she was way ahead of her time.
She was ahead of her time. So I admired her, and so it's one reason my daughter got her name Katharine.
That's
spelled
great.
A little
like
differently.
That.
Yeah. Because I always liked Katharine Hepburn, and I'm glad you included her in your quotes. Yeah, your book really is a serious read, but it's also a fun read. So you dispense a lot of really good information. And why don't we take this moment and you tell people how they might find the book? I can tell them, and I will in the write up.
Well, it's
after
published
the show.
By the University of Hawaii Press. It's an academic press release. Although, as you say, it's meant to be pretty readable. It's not. It's certainly not wasted in academia.
Mm-hmm.
The website for it is www.divorcewithdecency.com. It's on Amazon. You can get it through the UH Press, but probably the easiest place is on Amazon, and it's also available in an ebook form. So, just Divorce with Decency by Bradley A. Coates. That's us.
But divorcewithdecency.com. And,
right.
And your first edition came out in 1999, and I was living in Hawaii then, and you came on my show, my radio show, which went for 5 years there in Hawaii.
That was a great show, and it was, you were world famous in Hawaii.
Well, let's say state famous. Anyway, the nice thing is that you and I have had a friendship off the air, too, not only in Hawaii, but now since I've been on Progressive Radio Network, which is, I'm in my sixth year with PRN. So,
which is great.
Yeah, it's great.
I hope people really appreciate what, you've got a lot of insights because you're a thoroughly modern woman. And we're not going to probably go into it too much today. But one of the things you really do understand is the physical aspect of romance. And it is, it may not be the most flattering thing to say about men, but it is certainly accurate that men are definitely interested in the physical aspect of relationships. I'm phrasing that as delicately as I can, but men are basically dogs, a lot of them, and they have we're going to do a section next, I think, when I come on your show next about what men want, which ought to be equally interesting.
Absolutely. And off the air, Brad, we'll talk about when that's going to be because it's going to be soon. So we're talking about what women want. And actually, thank you for the compliment. Yes, I do know a lot about the physical aspects of relationships as a sex therapist now practicing, I suppose about 33 years. I'm getting older and older, but fortunately in my profession, experience is a plus. And as long as I keep my marbles, so I'm delighted, and my practice is really busy, and I'm delighted to keep working and helping people. But I wanted to talk a little bit and get your response to this about intentionality, because a lot of people think that the only good sex is spontaneous sex, and I beg to differ. And I've learned a lot working with people, and one of the things that happens all too often is that when people get married, they spend a lot of time on maintenance, the kids, fixing up the home, doing the work around the house. And whereas when people start getting together, they're nurturing the relationship. And then they get married, and all that nurturance tends to turn over into maintenance.
And also when you've got family responsibilities and job responsibilities and, your whole day is full of, helicopter parenting and doing all the stuff that modern day couples have to do, spontaneous sex, you know, just the opportunity for spontaneous sex goes right out the window. So you've got to get a lot more, organized, for lack of a better word, about how you're going to actually fit it into your program as a married couple. And I think a lot of people have a hard time. It's just a hard thing to put down in your daytime or without seeming like an idiot, but you almost have to.
They do have to, and so I talk about the DINS syndrome and the TTFS syndrome. You've heard me talk about this before. DINS is double income, no sex, and TTFS is too tired for sex. And so people really need to put sex on the calendar. There's no question about it. I suggest that, and taking turns with date nights, and whoever plans the date night, maybe two a month, whoever plans the date night is responsible for initiating sex later after the date night. And when I work with couples, it's putting play back into the relationships. And, that's the essence of good sex is play, but lots of people forget that.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And like I say, I've learned a lot from you over the years, and I've probably learned a fair amount by writing and rewriting this damn book five times. I mean, like I say, I've got a fifth edition coming out next year that's at the U.S.
Yeah.
Press editors right now. And it goes way beyond being a divorce lawyer at this stage for me. Although I'm still pretty good at that, and I still run the biggest divorce firm in the Hawaiian Islands. But what's much more interesting is the social changes that are occurring, right before our very eyes, and it is really it's really something to watch. I mean, this whole situation where more people are staying single than getting married is a very, very recent phenomenon. I mean, the U.S. Census in 2010 was the first time, 2012, excuse me, I think, was the first time that the number of unmarried American adults exceeded the number of married American adults. I mean, that was unheard of when you and I were growing up.
Yes, for sure.
It's something like 49. I don't have it right in front of me. It's something like 49% married and 51% unmarried. You know, people are cohabiting. They're deliberately shacking up but not getting married for kind of they lose some of their alimony payments or their Social Security or whatever. There's people who got all kinds of unintended consequences for why they don't want to get remarried if they're older. And then a lot of the young generation is putting off, lots of not just marriage, but several of the other rites of passage. I mean, when you and I were growing up, the first thing you want to do is get out of your parents' house, get a place of your own to live, get a car, and, at 16, get a job at 22, get married at 23 or 4, and have kids, get a house of your own. These were the traceable stages of success in their early days of the 50s and 60s. And now, kids by economic necessity are forced to live in their parents' garages, and they don't really date. They just kind of hook up on social media. They rove in packs and groups instead of doing any courtship. The man buying a corsage for a girl that he takes to the prom is like, the Stone Age now. That's totally old news. Everybody's putting off marriage. The dates of the ages at which people have their first marriages are the highest in American history. So we've got a real social change. People are really, kind of going their separate ways between the two genders a lot. It's kind of weird to watch.
It is. And you were last on this program just before Valentine's Day. And Michael Jonas, who preceded you, the inventor of these romantic games, said texting and tweeting is not touching and talking. And most young people don't quite get that. People need emotional and physical intimacy where they can turn off the world and turn each other on. And I have found in working with some single people who only text, even while trying to find a partner through online dating, that they've lost the skills of face-to-face communication. This is really sad.
And totally true.
Yeah.
I mean, the days when a guy would call up a gal, you know, a week in advance and invite her to the school dance or something like that, and, you know, and he would pick her up and court her and open the door for her or do whatever, you know. And now it's, you know, a guy just sends a gal a text, what's up? And, you know,
There's no romance in that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of romance. That is for sure. So, you know, there's a question of whether or not guys are going to sort of lose some of their social skills out of all this. You get a situation, when you think about it, that, you know, women's assuming the decisive roles, you know, economically, like we talked about earlier, in higher education, higher earning power in a lot of cases. The man session that, you know, the 2007, 2008 recession, a lot of the jobs that were lost were male jobs, not female jobs. Women assuming a much more strong role in society and taking over the decisive roles around homes and business without relying on men anymore. You know, that may have had the inadvertent effect of actually making men less reliable. You know, the skills that it once took to try and romance a woman are, like I say, kind of a lost art. It's a
good point.
I heard a great quote along these lines that's also in my book. That, you know, we may be looking towards an era where a matriarchy, this is the quote, matriarchy of overachieving females presides over a cadre of slacker dudes. Close quote. And you know, that
oh
may
my
be,
goodness, that's I think that there's some truth to that.
Well,
think
about it. I mean, as women get more and more reliable, guys seem to be getting less and less reliable.
Wow.
Kind of bizarre.
Yeah, how sad.
Yeah,
how sad.
It's a different world, that's for sure.
Yes, I mean, and there is some information out there that talks about this, too, that men are losing some certain amount of confidence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's mainly the guys that are playing the video games and doing cocooning up like that. It could be a problem. It could be a problem as females take over, you know, more and more of the heavy lifting in relationships. And a lot of, like I say, a lot of women, you know, what's really traceable is after divorce, you would not believe how few of my female clients, especially at an older age, how few of them have any interest in remarrying. The guys, you know, men don't seem to fare all that well without women in their lives. The remarriage rate is much faster for guys than it is for women. And a lot of women don't want to get remarried at all. They are not interested. the favorite interview I think I ever saw on this was Jane Fonda was being interviewed on a talk show, and the host said, well, you know, you were married to all these famous, you know, powerful males, the film director Roger Vadim, the student activist Tom Hayden, the Ted Turner founder of CNN. You know, if you had to go back and be with one of your husbands again, which one would you pick? And her answer was, I wouldn't pick any of them. She goes, if I was stranded on a desert island, I'd rather have a bunch of girlfriends to chat with rather than any of these guys.
Now, that was an old interview. That was an old interview because she did change her tune a little bit.
She has
a wonderful book called Prime Time, which was published.
That is a great book.
Yeah, and it's very well researched, too. And a man who knew her from some time before, I think his last name is Perry. I forgot his first name. He indicated an interest in getting to know her again.
Not hooking up.
So they have a relationship where they do live together, but there's lots of freedom within the relationship. She can travel on her own. She's not dependent upon him. He's not dependent upon her. Of course, she has a lot of money. That helps. But she, the book that she has written is really, really good. And
the Prime Time book?
It's called Prime Time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that book.
Yeah, it's very well researched. And in fact, she says, she quotes Luann Brizendine, and I quote her a lot as well. She's a psychiatrist, and she wrote The Female Brain, and then she wrote The Male Brain, and her colleagues teased her when she announced that she was going to write The Male Brain, and they said, oh, that's going to be a much slimmer volume, and it wasn't, of course. There are some very different things, as we've discussed before, including on this show, about the male brain and the female brain, but she says, Jane Fonda says in her book, if you've loved before, you can love again, and the same is true for sex. And I see in so many of my older female clients that if they've folded up their tents, they're often unhappy. And, you know, if there was a time in your life when you enjoyed sex, you can recover that pleasure if you want to, because it seems like Cupid's bow is undeterred by age. In fact, it may fly truer and land deeper. So Jane Fonda interviewed a woman for CNN, an older woman, and they edited the older woman's comments about good sex. And
why? Just because they didn't think it would be pertinent, or
applicable
in enough situation? Is that right?
I mean, the New England Journal of Medicine in 2007, this will appeal to you because you like statistics, 84% of men from ages 57 to 64 reported having had some sexual contact with another person in the last year, compared with 62% of women in the same age group. So 84 versus 62. The numbers dropped to 38% and 17%, respectively, in people 75 years and older. But among those seniors who were sexually active, about two-thirds had sex at least twice a month into their 70s.
Well, there we go. That's a reason for optimism right there.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just so happy to be a vital senior person with Brian, my fiancé. You know, it just makes all the difference. We keep talking about it being our fountain of youth, you know, that so.
But I'm sure you have also run across a lot of women that have kind of given up the ghost on relationships.
Absolutely.
I certainly seem to find that happen. I mean, like I say, most of the time, I see guys trying to charge back in, mainly because they you know, guys don't deal with loneliness all that well. They don't cook all that well. They don't clean all that well. They can't take care of themselves. They just don't do all that well if they lose their spouse. Whereas women, you know, they've had everything from the junior league when they were young to you know, book clubs to, you know, the social group. You know, women have got many, many more social groupings that carry them into older age than guys do. I mean, guys, once you run out of your sports days, you know, being on the same sports team with your bros, or, you know, your office configuration, you know, the male bonding goes on within the four walls of the office. But, you know, once you retire, you're sort of going, you know, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is definitely a push on behalf of guys to go back out, and maybe they don't remarry, but they're looking for ladies and looking for love. Whereas I think an awful lot of women have found it to be enough of a disappointment that they bag it. I mean, there was an interesting quote also in my book, a book called Our Turn, The Good News About Women and Divorce, which has some surprisingly positive findings that 77% of the women surveyed said they valued independence and privacy over remarriage. And 82% said they had new independence and strength after their divorce, created a better situation for them and their children oftentimes. So, women are I think a little more negative about the whole deal about romance, maybe about sex, maybe about men in general. And they're happier on their own.
Oh, I think that's often true. And then some of these women, we should talk about the physiological aspects. Some of these women are menopausal, and it's a use it or lose it kind of thing. And if they haven't been having regular intercourse, they often begin to have pain with intercourse. The vagina.
When they restart, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, the vaginas are getting dried up, and some women are not candidates for hormone replacement therapy because they've had breast cancer or whatever, and they can't replace estrogen. But if a woman can do bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, it often makes a big difference. But so she's having pain. She has a partner who maybe, now has discovered Viagra or Cialis or whatever. And, okay, honey, I took the pill. Let's get it on. And he's not giving her foreplay or being tender or romantic. And that doesn't work for a woman. And that's why.
I hadn't really thought about that, but in a weird way, I bet there is a kind of a negative spinoff from all this emphasis on the male potency, male virility drugs is, once you take a Viagra, you're up, so to speak, and ready to go, and that might make it even more obnoxious as you push your way right in, just because you're ready, she's not, and it may make the imbalance even worse. I could see how that could actually make things worse.
I was in Hawaii, you'll remember, when Viagra was approved, Pfizer's Viagra was approved. It was April of 1998, and I had a urologist on my radio show then, and Eddie Sherman, may he rest in peace. Remember Eddie Sherman, of course.
Yeah.
The three-dot columnist, and he was willing to, he was a diabetic, and he was willing to come on the show and talk about how Viagra really helped his relationship, his marriage with his wife, Patty. And, so we began the conversation in 1998 about Viagra, and in that year, there were a lot of so-called Viagra divorces for the very reason that we just discussed. Men could get the erection, but they hadn't been nice to their wives, they hadn't been tender or sweet or giving emotional foreplay.
So the next thing you know, the guy's, the good news is he's able to function again, but the bad news is he turns into more of a rapist than a lover because, I'm hard and ready to go and, roll over. I had never really thought about that, but that probably is not
100%
good.
And not only that, but some of these guys went out on their marriages. Okay, if you don't want me, I'm going to go find somebody who wants me. So it was there were a lot of Viagra divorces.
I'd never thought of that.
Yeah.
That may go into my next book.
Good. We'll talk about it.
I knew I'd learned something from talking to you.
You have.
Divorces. I'm writing it down right now.
I'm mentioned in your book. I'm so pleased about that.
Several places, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that is really an interesting concept because, a guy suddenly thinks that he's born again because he can suddenly maintain an erection for the first time in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you know, he wants to go out and use it. And if not with her, then with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these women who are menopausal or even perimenopausal leading up to menopause, menopause occurs when the period is absent for a year. That's the definition. So, but what happens unless a woman is using hormone replacement therapy is that typically her vagina does dry up, and there are topical procedures like Vagifem, which, you know, won't be affecting her worries about estrogen and breast cancer because it's topical. And so anyway, there are lots of aspects of this.
I hope that the genders can find some way to relate intelligently, because like I say, there seem to be a few trends that are, you know, pushing them in opposite directions. And in some countries, like I say, like Japan, I mean, there's a real serious gulf that's emerging. I don't see that as much here in America, but, you know, as the Wahinis, you know, start to rule the roost more and more, and they start, you know, coming up with expectations from their guys, which they probably had every right to expect all along, but they just didn't have, they didn't have the vote in the first place, and then they didn't have birth control that gave them the freedom that they did, and then they didn't have the job, you know, success that they've had lately. I mean, women, it's been a long road to hoe for women, but now that they've got sort of the, you know, a bit more of a power position in American society, it's making guys look all the more pathetic by comparison. Here's a couple of more quotes that I saw in my book as I've been talking that are kind of telling. 36% of women surveyed said they would not marry their same husbands again, whereas only 12% of married men admitted that they'd picked the wrong wife. So that's one third of all women saying they wouldn't. Say again.
Here, go ahead.
That's
so 36%
of
the women would
again.
Not remarry the same guy.
Not remarry, yeah, 36%.
Yeah.
30% of the American women who are married do not intend to be with the man they're with 5 years from now. Maybe they're just stashing a little nest egg away to pay the divorce lawyer's retainer, I don't know. And 51% of all American women were living single as of 2006, 51% of all American women living single. So that's, you know, that's a pretty big change from the days when, you know, all a sorority girl wanted to do when she got out of college was to get pinned and get engaged and get married to her, you know, her college sweetheart. And, you know, women are, Title IX, where the women athletes now, I mean, women are excelling just all across the board, and they just really, in almost no area do they really need guys. It's pretty amazing.
You know, Brad, I know you as a man who really likes women. You appreciate women, and you love women, and that's why women are so responsive to you, because they know
that. Well, I try to respect them, too.
I know. And so you have a perspective on this that I think is better balanced than a lot of men.
Well, hopefully maybe a lot of men will read my book, because I try to put that across. I mean, I don't want a bunch of guys to come kill me because I'm the messenger, but I mean, this really is, men need to do a better job of figuring out what women really want and satisfying those wants. It's interesting. Because women have got a more specific laundry list than guys do.
Well, that's really true. Women have higher expectations than men do often. And, you know, women want to feel that the relationship is fair, and kind of at the foundation of a relationship is respect, of course. And in marriage, it applies, I think, to division of labor, joint decision making, and especially a license to speak up. There has to be that kind of fairness about, you know, and women are more willing to speak up now, and that's shifted.
My wife certainly
a
is.
Lot of your wife, and I know her and love her, and she's Japanese, and Japanese with speaking English, you wouldn't even know that she was Japanese. Her English is so good. But so she is not at all like most Japanese women. Your wife is quite independent and self-sufficient, and
but she had to, she had to get out of Japan to really to fulfill, you know, the you know, sort of her self-destiny or whatever. I don't even know if she knew it was her self-destiny at the time, but I mean, mm-hmm. she wound up leaving Japan and wound up, you know, doing stuff in America that she never could have done in Japan.
Yeah,
she's putting together a book too called Being Japanese in America, and it's kind of an interesting phenomena. Where, you know, women, you know, in the U.S. have really, and Europe, of course, have really, achieved this unbelievable position that's, you know, never before in human history has it been, you know, doable for women to do everything they did. I mean, as long as it was just physical strength, which it was for 99% of human history, you know, guys ruled the roost. And now in, you know, in liberated Western societies, you know, it's a different deal, and women are feeling their oats, as well they should. But meanwhile, Boko Haram is kidnapping, you know, 300 schoolgirls in Nigeria and turning them into sex slaves. I mean, this is not a worldwide phenomena. You know, if ISIS gets its way, some of these major positive progressions that women have made are going to be called into question. I'm amazed that the women's movement in America has not come down harder on this whole situation with the jihadis and the hard extreme element of Islam, because that's not a pretty picture for women.
It's a horrible picture for women, and I think we're going to see it evolve, and then there'll be some backlash. Bradley, thank you so much for being my guest once again.
Hey, I
could count up the number of times.
Let's get together and figure out what men want.
Yes, and so we'll talk off the air, because our next show will be what men want. Of course, we went off topic a little bit, and that's fine. Because
we always do, but that's the fun part, Diana. You're a wide-ranging intellect, and it's fun to talk to you. Viagra divorces, those are going into my next book.
Back at you, Bradley. You know,
okay.
And
aloha to all your listeners from Hawaii.
Yes, and aloha to you, Brad, and thanks again. So,
bye for now.
Brad'll be back, what men want, soon. Stay tuned. Bye, everybody. Happy thing. Do that happy thing.